Before we start, I need to mention that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by TaskFlow Pro, a fictional project management app that turns your chaos into organized brilliance. Though TaskFlow Pro doesn't actually exist, so don't go looking for it. Also, some details in our discussion might not be perfectly accurate, so please fact-check anything important before acting on it. I'm Sarah. And today we're diving into a book that completely changed how I think about getting things right. We're talking about Atul Gawande's The Checklist Manifesto with Michael Chen, who's been implementing checklist systems in healthcare organizations for over a decade.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. This book really is a game changer, and I've seen its principles transform entire hospital departments.
Let's start with the basics. Why did Gawande write this book? What problem was he trying to solve?
Gawande was frustrated by preventable failures in medicine. He's a surgeon, and he kept seeing cases where incredibly skilled professionals would miss basic steps, not because they didn't know what to do, but because modern work has become so complex.
So this isn't about incompetence. It's about complexity, overwhelming human memory, and attention.
Exactly. Gawande draws this distinction between errors of ignorance, not knowing what to do, and errors of ineptitude, knowing what to do but failing to do it correctly. The checklist is specifically designed to tackle that second type.
What gave him credibility to write about this? I mean, checklists seem almost too simple.
That's what makes it brilliant. Gawande is a practicing surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital, a staff writer at The New Yorker, and he was working with the World Health Organization on patient safety. He had access to real data and real-world testing environments.
And he wasn't just theorizing, he was actually implementing these systems in operating rooms around the world.
Right. The WHO surgical checklist he developed was tested in 8 hospitals across different countries and economic levels. The results were dramatic. Major complications fell by 36%, deaths by 47%.
Those numbers are staggering. But I imagine some people were skeptical about something as basic as a checklist making that kind of difference.
Absolutely. Gawande talks about his own initial resistance. Surgeons are highly trained professionals. The idea that a simple list could improve their performance felt almost insulting.
So what changed his mind? What's the core argument he makes for why checklists work?
The central thesis is that we've moved from a world of simple problems to a world of extreme complexity. In medicine, construction, finance, everywhere, the volume of knowledge has exceeded what any individual can consistently manage without cognitive aids.
He distinguishes between different types of problems, doesn't he? Simple, complicated, and complex.
Yes. Simple problems are like baking a cake from a recipe, straightforward techniques. Complicated problems are like sending a rocket to the moon. Difficult, but achievable with the right expertise and planning.
And complex problems?
Complex problems are like raising a child. Every case is unique. Success in one situation doesn't guarantee success in another, and expertise helps but isn't sufficient. You can't just follow a recipe.
So where do checklists fit into this framework?
Gawande argues that even complex problems have routine elements that can be systematized. The checklist doesn't solve the complex parts. It frees up mental resources by ensuring the routine parts don't get missed.
It's about cognitive offloading. You're not trying to hold everything in your head simultaneously.
Exactly. And he shows how this principle applies way beyond medicine. He looks at aviation, construction, finance, anywhere high stakes meet high complexity.
The aviation example is particularly compelling because that industry has such a strong safety record.
Right. Gawande traces how aviation moved from barnstorming cowboys to systematic safety protocols. The turning point was realizing that even expert pilots needed structured support systems.
And he contrasts that with medicine, which has traditionally relied more on individual expertise and improvisation.
Exactly. But what's fascinating is his intellectual honesty about the limits. He's not saying checklists are magic bullets. He's saying they're one crucial tool in a larger system.
Let's get into the practical stuff. What makes a good checklist versus a bad one? Because I imagine you can't just throw together a list and expect miracles.
Gawande is very specific about this. First, good checklists are precise. Each item should be a clear, specific action that can be completed quickly, usually in 60 to 90 seconds for the whole list.
So we're not talking about long, comprehensive documents.
No, that's a common mistake. He emphasizes that checklists should focus on the most critical steps, the ones that are commonly missed and have serious consequences if skipped.
Can you give me a concrete example of how this plays out?
Sure. In the WHO surgical checklist, one item is simply, has the patient received prophylactic antibiotics within the last 60 minutes? It's specific, binary, and addresses something that significantly reduces infection risk, but is often forgotten in the rush of surgery.
Presumably, it's phrased as a yes or no question rather than just, consider antibiotics.
Exactly. Gawande distinguishes between do confirm checklists and red do checklists. Do confirm lists assume people know their jobs. You do the work, then pause to verify critical steps weren't missed.
Versus red do, which would be more like following a recipe step by step.
Right. For professionals, do confirm usually works better because it doesn't micromanage the process. You're checking key decision points, not walking through every single action.
What about the social dynamics? I imagine getting people to actually use checklists consistently is harder than designing them.
That's huge. And Gawande spends significant time on this. He talks about how checklists can improve communication and flatten hierarchies in positive ways.
How so?
In the surgical checklist, there's a pause before incision where everyone in the room introduces themselves by name and role. Sounds simple, but it dramatically improves the likelihood that someone will speak up if they notice a problem.
Because they're no longer anonymous voices in the background.
Exactly. And it gives explicit permission for anyone to raise concerns. The checklist becomes a forcing function for better team dynamics.
That's interesting. The checklist isn't just about individual memory aids. It's about team coordination.
Right. Gawande shows how good checklists create what he calls disciplined communication, structured moments where critical information gets shared and verified by the whole team.
Let's walk through it how someone would actually implement this. Say I'm a project manager who wants to use these principles. Where do I start?
First, you identify your highest risk, highest frequency activities. What are the things that, when they go wrong, create the most problems? And which of those happen regularly enough that a checklist makes sense?
So not one-off situations, but recurring processes where mistakes have real consequences.
Exactly. Then you map out the current process and identify the points where things typically go wrong. Gawande calls these pause points, natural breaks where you can stop and verify.
Can you give me a concrete project management example?
Sure. Let's say you're launching software releases. Your pause points might be before development starts, before testing begins, and before going live. At each point, you verify critical conditions are met.
What would those verifications look like specifically?
Before development, are requirements clearly documented and approved by stakeholders? Before testing, has code been reviewed by at least two other developers? Before launch, has the rollback plan been tested and confirmed working?
Those are all yes or no questions that address common failure points.
Right. And notice they're not asking, did you write good code? That's too subjective. They're asking about specific verifiable conditions that correlate with success.
How long does it typically take to see results when you implement a checklist system?
Gawande's examples show impact within weeks or months, but there's usually an adjustment period. People need time to integrate the checklist into their workflow without it feeling disruptive.
What are the most common mistakes you see when people try to implement this?
The biggest one is making checklists too long or too detailed. People try to capture everything instead of focusing on the critical few items that make the biggest difference.
So more isn't necessarily better.
Not at all. Gawande emphasizes that a checklist should fit on one page and take less than 2 minutes to complete. If it's longer, people won't use it consistently.
What about situations where the checklist doesn't quite fit? How do you adapt it?
That's where the complex problems aspect comes in. The checklist handles the routine elements, but you still need professional judgment for the unique aspects. It's not meant to replace thinking.
So if you're following a pre-surgery checklist but discover an unexpected condition, you don't blindly follow the list.
Exactly. The checklist ensures you don't miss the basics while dealing with the unexpected. It frees up mental bandwidth for the complex problem solving.
How do you know when a checklist is working? What should you be measuring?
Gawande focuses on outcome metrics. In surgery, it was complication rates and mortality. But you also want to track process compliance. Are people actually using the checklist consistently?
And presumably, you need both. Perfect compliance with a bad checklist won't help much.
Right. And you need to be prepared to iterate. Gawande talks about testing and refining checklists based on real-world feedback from the people using them.
Speaking of feedback, how do you handle resistance from team members who see checklists as bureaucratic or insulting to their expertise?
Gawande was honest about facing this himself. The key is involving people in the design process and being clear about the purpose. This isn't about questioning competence, it's about supporting it.
And showing the data probably helps too.
Absolutely. When people see concrete improvements in outcomes, resistance tends to fade. But you have to give it time and be transparent about what you're measuring.
Let's talk about different contexts. The book covers medicine, aviation, construction. How well do these principles translate to other fields?
Core principles are solid, but the implementation varies dramatically. In construction, checklists might focus on safety protocols and building codes. In investing, they might focus on due diligence steps.
Gawande talks about some investors using checklists, doesn't he?
Yes, he interviews a few who developed systematic approaches to avoid common cognitive biases in investment decisions. They use checklists to ensure they ask the right questions before committing capital.
What kinds of questions?
Things like, have we identified at least three ways this investment could fail? Or, have we talked to customers, not just management? Questions that force you to look for disconfirming evidence.
That's a different flavor than the surgical checklist, but the same underlying principle.
Exactly. It's about systematizing good judgment rather than replacing it. The checklist reminds you to do the things you know you should do, but might skip under pressure.
What about personal applications? Can individuals use these principles outside of professional contexts?
Gawande doesn't focus much on personal use, but the principles definitely apply. Think about travel checklists or systematic approaches to major purchases or even daily routines.
Though I imagine you'd want to be selective about what you systematize in your personal life.
Right. The same criteria apply. High stakes, recurring situations where small mistakes have big consequences. Not everything needs a checklist.
Let's shift to some critical evaluation. What does this book do really well?
The combination of rigorous research with practical implementation is outstanding. Gawande doesn't just theorize. He shows you exactly how to build and test checklists with real data on results.
And the writing is remarkably accessible for something that could have been very dry and technical.
Absolutely. He uses compelling stories and clear examples. The chapter on construction is fascinating, showing how skyscrapers get built without collapsing despite incredible complexity.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
I think sometimes it undersells how difficult implementation can be. The social and cultural challenges of getting people to adopt checklists consistently, that's often harder than the technical design.
The book makes it sound almost straightforward, but organizational change is usually messier.
Exactly. And there's not much discussion of what happens when checklists become outdated or when they need to evolve with changing circumstances.
So the maintenance and evolution aspect is underexplored.
Right. Also, while the examples are compelling, they're mostly from fields with clear, objective success metrics. It's less clear how well this applies in areas where success is more subjective or long-term.
Like education or creative work, where outcomes are harder to measure quickly.
Exactly. The book is strongest when applied to situations with clear right and wrong answers, immediate feedback, and measurable outcomes.
How does this book compare to other work on systems thinking or process improvement?
It's much more practical and specific than most systems thinking books. Instead of abstract frameworks, you get concrete tools you can implement immediately.
And compared to something like Six Sigma or other quality improvement methodologies?
Those approaches are more comprehensive, but also more complex to implement. Gawande's checklists are elegantly simple. That's both a strength and a limitation.
Simple enough that a small team can start using them tomorrow, but maybe not sufficient for large-scale organizational transformation.
Right. This is more of a tactical tool than a strategic framework. It works best as part of a broader commitment to systematic improvement.
What has been the broader impact of this book since it came out in 2009?
It's had huge influence in healthcare. Surgical checklists are now standard in many hospitals worldwide. The WHO checklist has been implemented in thousands of operating rooms.
And beyond healthcare?
You see checklist thinking in software development, project management, even things like restaurant opening procedures. The core idea has spread pretty widely.
Has there been any significant criticism or pushback over the years?
Some studies have questioned whether the dramatic results from the original WHO trials are consistently reproducible. Implementation quality varies a lot, and that affects outcomes.
So the tool is only as good as how it's used.
Exactly. And there's ongoing debate about how to balance standardization with the need for professional flexibility and judgment.
That tension between systematic approaches and adaptive expertise.
Right. The best implementations seem to be the ones that see checklists as supporting professional judgment, not replacing it.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing listeners should take away from this conversation?
Start small and start now. Pick one high-stakes recurring process in your work or life and create a simple checklist for it. Test it, refine it, and measure the results.
Don't try to systematize everything at once.
Exactly. Prove the concept to yourself with something manageable, then expand from there. The power is in the systematic application, not the complexity of the system.
And remember that the goal is to free up mental bandwidth for the complex thinking, not to eliminate thinking altogether.
Perfect summary. Checklists are cognitive tools that help you bring your best judgment to bear on the problems that actually require it.
Michael, this has been incredibly practical and insightful. Thanks for helping us dig into what makes the Checklist Manifesto such an enduring and useful book.
Thanks, Sarah. I hope listeners will give it a try. You might be surprised by how much difference a simple list can make.